Catherine could be as stubborn as a mule when she wanted to be. It was perhaps partly why she had been one of the five girls who'd won a settlement from USRC in the first place. Ewing's letter had mentioned the very depressed state of business as a reason for the withdrawal of expenses. Inevitably, as the economy crumbled, sales of radium watches declined along with everything else. But it wasn't only that which was now sucking the dollars from the firm's bank account. It was the case of Eben Byers. It had been all over the papers last March. Byers was a world-renowned industrialist and playboy, a wealthy man who raced horses and lived in a magnificent home. He was high profile and important. After Byers had received an injury back in 1927, his doctor had prescribed Radithor. Byers was so impressed with it, he consumed several thousand bottles. When his story made the news, the headlines read, "The radium water worked fine until his jaw came off." Byers had died of radium poisoning on 30th of March 1932, but before he died, he gave evidence to the Federal Trade Commission, FTC, that Radithor had killed him. The authorities reacted with much more alacrity than they had in the cases of the dial painters. In December 1931, the FTC issued a cease and desist order against Radithor. The US Food and Drug Administration would go on to declare radium medicines illegal. Finally, the American Medical Association removed the internal use of radium from its list of new and non-official remedies, where it had remained even after the discovery of the dial painters' deaths. It seemed wealthy consumers were much more worthy of protection than working-class girls. After all, dial painting was still going on, even in 1933. Catherine had read the stories about Byers with sadness for the victim, but also an overwhelming sense of vindication. Radium was a poison. The girls knew it, intimately, but until the Byers case, public opinion had swung the other way. Indeed, with four of the famous radium girls still alive, almost 5 years on from their case, there had been much muttering that their lawsuit had been nothing more than a fraudulent scheme to get money from the company. For that company, the Byers case was a disaster. USRC supplied the radium for many of the products that had now been banned. The whole radium industry collapsed. It may or may not have been connected, but in August 1932, having failed to find a buyer for the old orange plant, the firm had it razed to the ground. The dial painter's studio was the last building to come down. The women had mixed feelings, seeing it gone. It was a bittersweet triumph of sorts, except for them. Erasing the studio and all it had done was not as simple as covering the site with anonymous asphalt. Lying in her hospital room in February 1933, Catherine Sharp forced herself to look at what the radium had done to her. Her leg was a mess. Finally, after much consideration, she decided to have it amputated. It was a decision for her future. "It is my ambition to continue writing," she said. She could do that, she thought, with or without a leg. But Humphreys had bad news for her. "There is no question of an amputation," he now said. Catherine and her leg had worsened of late, and both were now in far too serious a state for such a major operation to be performed.